So we have the two parshas of Tazria and Metzora, and they deal in the main with the halachas of Tzaras, and as we know, through various means, Tzaras is a result of various wrongdoings. First among them, foremost among them, is Lashon Hara. And as we look through the parsha, we see that there are broadly three categories of tzaras. There is tzaras of the person, that is either in the skin or the hair. And then there is tzaras of garments. And finally, in next week's parsha, we'll have tzaras of the house. So there's the person, the garments, and the house. That's the order, if you follow the laning, that you will see these types of tzaras being presented. What's interesting is, if we consult the Rambam, and the Rambam sources are in Chazal, he describes the way, or the stages of tzaras actually work the other way around. That is to say, a person is acting inappropriately and saying things he shouldn't be saying. And speaking Lashon Hara, says Rambam, it closes in. That means the first thing to be affected is the house. And that's a warning. And the person himself is yet untouched, but it's the decor suffers. And if he takes the message, well and good. If not, he could lose his house. Then, if he still persists and speaks Lashon Hara, says Rambam, so he'll receive tzaras in his clothing. It's a little bit, I wouldn't say closer to home, because the home is gone, but closer to him. And similarly, he should heed the message. And if he does, well and good. If not, he could lose his shirt. And the whole thing starts again. Finally, he'll get tzaras of the person. That means if a person actually gets tzaras in their skin, they must be very determined. They must be a very dedicated Lashon Hara speaker, because they're prepared to lose pretty much everything. And maybe there are people like that. What's interesting, therefore, and the question that is raised by many Meforshim, Rishonim, and Achronim, is why is it that V'nafuchu, the order that the types of tzaras is presented in the Torah, is the reverse of the order that they would actually come upon the person? To summarize, the order in the Torah is person, garments, house. The order in actuality is house, garments, person. And there, as we say, are many responses to this question. But a very interesting approach begins with a comment of Rambam. When it comes to the tzaras of a house, the Torah actually explicitly introduces that type of tzaras with the words kisavo el haaretz, when you come to haaretz, eretz kanan. Venasati nega tzaras, beveis eretz achuzaschem. That there could be tzaras in the houses of your inheritance. And Ramban comments there and states that actually tzaras of a house only applies in Eretz Canaan. And the reason why is that tzaras is not a natural phenomenon to accrue or to afflict a person who speaks Lashon Hara. Ironically, although he of course is failing significantly because he shouldn't be speaking Lashon Hara, but it is a symptom of a certain madrega. In the words of Ramban, because in Eretz Yisrael the Shekhinah is ever present, and things should be as they on the higher level. Therefore, if they're deficient, we're within range to receive a message that is the product of Hashkocha. It's specifically because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is so connected to Eretz Canaan that he will send messages within Eretz Canaan that he might not send in Chutz La'aretz. And that is why, says Ramban, as much as it's an unpleasant experience, but it's the product of a certain closeness that should exist and does exist within Eretz Yisrael. And that is why the Torah introduces the Negoim with the words Kisavo El Haaretz, because it's only in Eretz Yisrael that a house would receive a message like that. In Chutz La'aretz, the good news is your house doesn't get Tzaraas. The bad news is no one's talking to you. Now, interestingly, and although it is his chiddush, because we've seen that the house is based on the pasuk Kisavo El Haaretz, Ramban also insists that the same is true for tzaraas of the clothing, right, that middle category of tzaraas. It's also true that that is only in Eretz Yisrael. However, Ramban does concur and does concede that the third type of tzaraas, tzaraas on the body itself, could exist even in Chutz La'aretz, and indeed we have examples of people that received tzaraas for Lashon Hara in Chutz La'aretz, even though one could claim that it's not necessarily a proof because we hadn't yet come to Eretz Yisrael, and therefore Hashgacha, so to speak, hadn't yet been centralized or localized in Eretz Canaan. But nonetheless, says Ramban, tzaraas on the person can exist even in Chutz La'aretz. And therefore, says Pardes Yosef, based on Ramban, we can understand now why it is that the Torah ordered the type of tzaraas backwards. As if to say, there was always a progression from better to worse or from worse for better. In actuality, it's house, clothing, and person. But the reason why the Torah has stated the order in reverse is because it wished to start with tzaraas of the person. Why? Because the generation that received this mitzvah was not yet in Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, the mitzvah was presented to them in a way that began with the type of tzaraas that could be relevant to them, which according to Ramban is specifically tzaraas of the person. It then works backwards in future, will also apply to other types of tzaraas. Now this idea of the Pardes Yosef is actually a major chiddush, because really what he's saying is, in the heartland of Pshuto Shel Mikra, is that the mitzvah of tzaraas is not a mitzvah that was given only to the generation that received the Torah. There were some mitzvahs that were only for that generation. How to encamp around the Mishkan. That's only for the Dor HaMidbar. That doesn't apply in Eretz Canaan. The mitzvah of tzaraas is not like that. It's not a mitzvah l'sho'ah, a mitzvah only for a certain time. It's a mitzvah l'doros. It applies for all time. That's true. But nonetheless, says Pardes Yosef, even a mitzvah that in principle and whose details apply for all time, nonetheless, the nuances and the particulars of the way the mitzvah is presented will be appropriate for the generation that originally received that mitzvah. And that is an idea which can have application for many, many mitzvahs, and Mirtz Hashem will see more examples of that on other occasions. But that's the principle of the Pardes Yosef. We've quoted Ramban, and Ramban seems to be of the understanding that of the three categories of tzaraas, only tzaraas of the person applies in Chutz La'aretz. The Sefer HaChinuch is one step to the side. The Sefer HaChinuch seems to understand that it's specifically tzaraas of the house that's limited to Eretz Yisrael. The other two types could exist in Chutz La'aretz. And that, as we mentioned, is more in keeping with the pashtus of the psukim, because once again, the Torah only introduces the third type of tzaraas, tzaraas of the house, with the words kisavo al haaretz. And therefore, the opinion of the Sefer HaChinuch is that only tzaraas of the house is restricted to Eretz Canaan. The other two types can be in Chutz La'aretz. And this seems to be the opinion also of Rambam, also in the Mishneh Torah, in Hilchos Tumas Tzaraas. He also talks about Eretz Yisrael as opposed to other places, and Rambam also only mentions Tzaraas of the house as being the type of Tzaraas that could only apply in Eretz Yisrael. It seems that he concurs with the Sefer HaChinuch that the other two types of the body and clothing could be in Chutz La'aretz. We would yet explain the order similar to what the Pardes Yosef says. It's got to start with the person, then garments, which are applicable, and finally the house. But there is a further point here, and it is most general in nature. The Sefer Shiras David by a contemporary Mechaber, Rav Aaron David Goldberg, Shalita, he encourages us to take a look, to take a sweep through the parshas of Tazria and Metzora. And if we do, we'll find something very interesting. As we know, there are two parts to Tzaraas. There's getting it, and then there's getting rid of it. There's Tumas Tzaraas, and there's Taras HaMetzora. Now, Taras HaMetzora is mentioned in the beginning of Parshas Metzora. Zos Tiyeh Taras HaMetzora. In fact, there are certain people who would refer to next week's Parsha not as Metzora, but as Parshas Tara. That's nice. The Ben Ish Chai refers to it as Parshas Tara. If you can choose between Metzora and Tara, and the words say Taras HaMetzora, he went for Tara. Everyone else goes for Metzora. So be it. But that is outlined in the beginning of Metzora. But what's very interesting is, of the three categories of Tzaraas, the order is first, as we mentioned, the Torah describes Tzaraas of the person. That's the first half of Tazria. Then moves on to Tzaraas of the garment. That's the second half of Tazria. Then, the beginning of Metzora, Taras Metzora. And finally, Tzaraas of the house. Now this is something which is quite intriguing, because we haven't finished with getting Tzaraas before we've started to talk about how to get out of it. In other words, if we could intuit what would be the order, it would be all the types of Tzaraas that you can get, and then how to get rid of them. So whatever the order will be, first the person, then the garment, then the house, and that's all done, and then how do you get rid of it? Taras HaMetzora. The Torah, so to speak, interrupted the various types of Tzaraas you can get and divided between type 2 and type 3 by already telling you how to get rid of it. And that's a good shaila. That seems to be a frustration within the order. Says the Shiras David, based on our discussion, we can well understand. Because according to the Rambam and according to the Sefer HaChinuch, the first two types of Tzaraas could have been contracted in Chutz La'aretz, Tzaraas of the person, Tzaraas of the garment. The third type, Tzaraas of the house, could not apply in Chutz La'aretz. And therefore, if we say that the specific way in which the mitzvah of Tzaraas was given to Bnei Yisrael was as applicable first and foremost to the generation that received that mitzvah, we can understand why, having mentioned the first two types, it already begins to talk about how to become tahor from them, because that's all that exists in Chutz La'aretz, and therefore it deals with that, and finally goes back for the third type of Tzaraas, which only applies in Eretz Canaan. So that is a very profound statement. It is as general as it gets in the parshas of Tazria and Metzora to understand the four sections in the order that they are. Then the Shiras David adds a masterstroke, because he moves from a most general discussion to a very particular discussion. As we know, part of the Tara process of the Metzora, which interestingly has two stages, that itself is very unusual, I think even unique. Normally, a person has a Tara process, so he does what he needs to do, and then that's that. But here it begins on with the two birds, and that's a whole process, and then you wait, and then you have a second stage of the Tara process, which are the korbanos. Now the korbanos that he brings are three in number, three different types of korbanos. They are a chatas, an ola, and an asha, a burnt offering, sin offering, and a guilt offering. And that pretty much covers everything. In fact, interestingly, I saw earlier this week in the writings of Rabbi Yosef Nechemia Kornitzer that the three korbanos, after all, this poor guy, he's already been through so much, you make him bring three korbanos. Would one not suffice? Choose a chatas, choose an asha. Why does he bring three types of korbanos? So Rabbi Yosef Nechemia says the three korbanos that the Metzora brings, ola, chatas, and asham, correspond to what Chazal have told us, that Lashon Hara is damaging for three parties. The one who speaks Lashon Hara, the one who hears Lashon Hara, and the one about whom it is spoken. How does it damage the one who speaks? He incurs an aveira. How does it damage the one who hears? He's party to lashon hara. He may end up believing it and act accordingly. You never know. And of course, the one poor guy who's had lashon hara spoken about him, who knows how many opportunities he won't be invited to the important kiddushes, and they won't get shlishi anymore, and life is downhill from there. Says Rabbi Yosef Nechemiah, these three parties damaged to lashon hara are represented by chatos, ola, and asham. How so? Chatos is a sin offering. It refers first and foremost to the person who performed the sin, and that corresponds to the one who speaks lashon hara. he has committed a sin of lashon hara. He brings a chatos for that. What about the ola? Chazal tell us that ola is an interesting korban. It's almost, in a sense, it's the most ruchniest of the korbanos because the entire thing goes on the mizbeach. And that's why Chazal say that an ola corresponds to a person's thoughts. Ola mechaperas al hiro halev. Whose thoughts need atoning for? Says Rabbi Yosef Nechemiah, that's the person who hears lashon hara. He didn't say anything, but he gets to thinking. He's heard the gossip, he's heard the slander, and inside he's thinking, you know, could be, maybe yes, maybe no. Those thoughts need also kapara. And it's on the bill of the one who spoke lashon hara. And that's why he also brings an ola. And an asham, typically, or there's a certain branch of asham, where if you damage someone, in addition to making restitution, you need to bring an asham. Classic example, asham gezelos. If you stole from someone under certain circumstances, not only do you need to pay them back, but you also need to bring an asham to expiate that guilt of having damaged someone else. And that corresponds to the one they spoke lashon hara about who was damaged. So that's a very interesting insight into those three korbanos of the Metzora, the three korbanos because there's three people who get damaged through lashon hara. But at any rate, these korbanos are detailed in Perek Yudalad, Pasuk Yud, that's in Parshas Metzora. And what do they say? If you look at the psukim, you'll see he has to bring those korbanos. And of course, as we know, korbanos are very often accompanied by menachos, flower offering, meal offering, Isaron Soles, whatever it will be, and that's also mentioned there. Okay. Anything else he needs to bring? Not only are these korbanos accompanied by menachos, meal offerings, they're also accompanied by nesachim, wine offerings. And that's the full korban. Where are these nesachim referred to? If you look in next week's parsha, if you look in Parsha's Metzora, there is no reference to the nesachim. Only to the korban and to the mincha. So where does the nesachim come from? Well, you'll be pleased to hear the answer is, as per the Gemara in Maseches Tzvachim, Adav Tzadik Aleph, it comes from a pasuk in Parshas Bamidbar, in Perek Tesvav Pasuk Hey, which is the parsha of nesachim, parsha Shlach, nesachim. And there it says, if a person brings any korban, ola, ola zevach, he brings nesachim. And the Gemara darshans, those three words, ola, o, lezevach, everything gets scrutinized through drash, and those three words are indicating the three nesachim that accompany the korbanos of the Metzora. That's that. So our question, of course, is, why is it so complicated? In other words, the animals for the korbanos, you just told me, black and white in the pasuk. The menachos, the meal offerings for the korbanos, you told me black and white in the pasuk. And when it comes to the nesachim, which is an equal part of bringing that korban, I was left in suspense. And if I don't have my drash glasses on, I would have missed it completely. Because it comes from three extra words in Chumash Bamidbar. But why did nesachim get that very different treatment in terms of presentation? Says Shiras David, based on our discussion, we understand. The halacha is that nesachim, although they were given in the Midbar, were only ever brought from the time we came into Eretz Kanaan. The actual korbanos and korban mincha would be brought even in the Midbar. Nesachim were not brought in the Midbar, only in Eretz Kanaan. Well, says Shiras David, now we understand. If it is the case that the mitzvahs of Metzorah, both the type of tzaras you could get and how to get out of it, were given in a way that is first and foremost appropriate for the generation that received it. In the Midbar, it is only those elements that could be brought by the generation in the Midbar that are referred to in our parshas of Tazria and Metzorah, the animal and the menachos. Whereas the Nesachim, as true as it is, that ultimately they'll be part of it, but they're not part of it for the Midbar, and they get deferred until later on. So it's a wonderful discussion here of the Shiras David, because we see on the one hand this idea, how it explains such a broad question as to the order of the sections of Tazria and Metzorah, and then the other hand it goes, one could almost say, from macro to micro, to the details, to the Nesachim, where they come, Beremes, etc. That's how a Talmud Chacham looks at the Psukim. In any event, we do see that in principle, Tzaras can apply even in Chutz La'aretz. I mean, everyone seems to concur with that. And moreover, addressing and purifying the Mitzorah from Tzaras is a mitzvah. And it is a mitzvah that the Tosefta tells us, which is quoted by the Rambam, applies even in Chutz La'aretz, as if to say, if a person can become a Mitzorah in Chutz La'aretz, so then he goes through as much of the process as he can in Chutz La'aretz as well. And indeed, says Rambam, that's the case. And this is very interesting, because most people who are fluent in halacha will rarely come across the halachas of how to purify a Mitzorah. And it's just not in the curriculum. And it's not really discussed. It's not discussed by the Shulchan Aruch or by the Tor. I mean, the Rambam discusses everything, so that doesn't help us. But in terms of the halacha lamaisa, the practical codes, you're not going to find it in the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch or the Chai Adam or anywhere like that. It seems to have faded as a body of halacha. And the question, of course, is why not? I mean, we've got to know what to do. You know, it shouldn't happen, but if it does, you've got to know how to deal with it. At least the Kohanim should know. They should learn the halachas of duchening and of purifying mitzvah. And this question is discussed by the Tiferes Yisrael. The Tiferes Yisrael, one of the classic commentators on the Mishnayos. You have Bar Tanura, Tosfos Yom Tov, and down below you have the Tiferes Yisrael on all the Shishas Sedrei Mishnah, Rabbi Yisrael Lifshitz. And he discusses this in his introduction to Seder, to Maseches Negoim. And the Tiferes Yisrael says, I was always wondering, how come no one ever really speaks about, you know, you'll never really find a codification of the halachas of purifying a mitzvah nowadays. And says Tiferes Yisrael, I once had occasion to meet with Rabbi Akiva Eger. And I asked him this question, how come no one ever talks about Taras Mitzvah? And Rabbi Akiva Eger said to me, says Tiferes Yisrael, it's a good question. And he's also bothered by this question, and he has yet to find an answer that has satisfied him. But that's not very encouraging. And that's what Rabbi Akiva Eger had to say. He recognized the question and still searching for a good answer. How come it's just dropped from the syllabus? Well, says Tiferes Yisrael, although it's a daunting prospect, because Rabbi Akiva Eger says he hasn't found a satisfying answer, but Tiferes Yisrael says, but I've got to suggest something. And he actually has one or two suggestions. Interestingly, we will hear in his first, in the first two suggestions, echoes of a broader question, which was being discussed also at the time of Rabbi Akiva Eger and all of these greats in the mid-1800s, and that is the possibility of bringing korbanos again, bizman hazeh, even before Mashiach comes. And as we know, this was the great idea of Rav Tzvi Hirsch Kalischer, Drishas Tzion. He took everyone on single-handedly, and he felt that you could offer korbanos. And there was a great uproar throughout rabbinic literature. And as we'll see, the question of Mitzorah shares some of the same concerns. Firstly, says Tiferes Yisrael, if you look in the Rambam, and this is a very sensitive discussion, if you look in the Rambam in Hilchos Trumos, you will see that he distinguishes between two types of Kohen. After all, ask the question, how does a Kohen know he's a Kohen? His name may be Kohen, that can help. Maybe his father was a Kohen. But how does his father know he's a Kohen? And this, it's an important question. For the most part, most Kohanim cannot actually prove that they're Kohanim. However, we will still give them Kohen, and they'll still Duchen. They're what's called, they're what's known as Kohanei Chazaka. I mean, they're presumed Kohanim, and that's a strong presumption, and it's good enough for many things. However, says Rambam, there are certain things for which being a Kohen Mufsak is not sufficient. You need to be what's called a Kohen Meyuchas. You need actually to be able to document your pedigree and your lineage all the way back to to Aaron HaKohen. Examples are offering korbanos, and another example, says Rambam, is Taras HaMetzora. In order to be a Kohen that could administer and do whatever a Kohen needs to do to make the Metzora Tahor, that can only be done by a Kohen who is Miyuchas. Okay, and therefore the Radvaz, one of the later Rishonim, Rabbi David ben Zamra, said that is why in our time we never really get involved with Mitzrayim, even if you can find one, because it's very difficult to find a Kohen who's actually Miyuchas. And should you say, says Tiferes Yisrael, well, it can't hurt, at least L'chumra, at least administer the Tahara for added measure, says Tiferes Yisrael, you can't. Because what's very interesting about the Tahara of a Metzora is that he does something that under normal circumstances is an Aveira. He needs to shave his entire head with a razor, which actually is Osir if you're not a Metzora. It's a bit ironic. Part of his Tahara process is to shave his entire head, and if you to do so with outside of the context of Taharas Metzora is a Lo Saseh from the Torah. And therefore, says Tiferes Yisrael, it's one of those situations where if you're not sure, don't do it, because it's not a chumra, it's an aveira. And that's why we kind of let the matter rest. That's the first response as to why we don't hear of Kohanim being Metahar any Mitzrayim. We don't hear that much about Mitzrayim either. Maybe they're not advertising. But even if you found one, it's not something we get involved in. The second suggestion, also from the Tiferes Yisrael, elsewhere, in his introduction to Seder Kodshim. And there, he is of the opinion, based on words of Chazal, that whenever the Kohen specifically is mentioned as doing something in the Torah, it's got to be a Kohen, not only as a person, but to officiate as a Kohen for these things, he needs to be wearing Big Day Kahuna. Bikihuno, he needs to be wearing Big Day Kahuna. For a Kohen to officiate in any of these capacities, Karbonos, of course, and again, this was one of the big questions that came up against Rav Kalasher, because in order to bring Karbonos, the Avoda is possible unless you're wearing Big Day Kahuna. Now you may say, okay, let's make Big Day Kahuna. It's not so simple. And interestingly, this parallels another discussion that was running through Europe in the mid-1800s. Because one of the ingredients that you need for Big Day Kahuna is the treles. Because the avnate, which is the special belt of the Kohen, contained a number of materials, and one of them was treles. And the point is that if any of the materials are missing or not the right color, so then the Big Day Kahuna are invalid. And if they're invalid, the Kohen can't officiate. Which is interesting because the whole treles issue, which began in the mid-1800s and still continues until our time, and the focus generally is for the mitzvah of tzitzis. I mean, where else would a person need treles? But actually, there was this sub-niche of discussion where it was also about treles for Big Day Kahuna because of Kalasher was looking to bring korbanos. So he's very interested in getting the treles, not just for tzitzis, for the avnit of the Kohen. But of course, that then opened up the question, what is treles? Where does it come from? And what color is it? Etc. and so forth, and there's so many questions about that, and you can't afford to get it wrong. And the reason why you can't afford to get it wrong is because the belt of the Kohen, the avnate, among the materials are wool and linen, which is shatnas under normal circumstances. And it's another one of those things where within the context of Big Day Kahuna, it's allowed. But if you got the Big Day Kahuna wrong, so you're just wearing shatnas. So it's bad news all round. And therefore, it was another one of those situations where it won't help to be machmir. It's not a chumrah. It's possibly an aveira from the Torah. So in all of these ways, we see matters pertaining to kahuna, this not the sort of thing that we engage in unless we're absolutely sure. Okay. Another very interesting point that is raised here is from Rav Menachem Kasher Zatzal in his encyclopedic Torah Shlema, in his Miluim, in the endnotes to Parshas Shemos and Simon Yud Ches. And he draws our attention to a comment of the Toras Kohanim in the end of Perek Yud Dalet, in Parshas Metzora. And there, the Pasuk reads, Perek Yud Dalet, Lehoros es B'nei Yisrael, to instruct B'nai Yisrael regarding Negoi. Now, what is the meaning of to instruct B'nai Yisrael regarding Negoi, or to instruct the Kohanim, or whoever it is? Presumably, every mitzvah has its rules, and therefore every mitzvah should have its lahoros. Every mitzvah should end with the word lahoros. There's the mitzvah of tefillin, lahoros, teach people what they are and how to make them, how to put them on. But we don't find it with other mitzvahs. Yet at the end of the section of being mitahir, the mitzvah, the Torah ends with the word lahoros. What is the message from that word to instruct with regards to tzaraas? Says the Torah's Kohanim, melamed, this teaches us, she'eino roa es hanegoim ad she'yirenu rabo, that a Kohen is not qualified to examine negoim, tzaraas, unless his Rebbe has instructed him, unless his teacher has instructed him. Lahoros means this requires instruction from a Rebbe. But again, says the Torah Shlema, doesn't everything require instruction? If you don't know, so then you don't know. And that's where Rav Kasher suggests that it could be what the Torah's Kohanim is saying, is that examining tzaraas is the type of thing that requires an unbroken transmission from Rebbe to Talmud, analogous to what we know otherwise as smicha. In the same way that there are certain halachas of the Torah that a person is only ordained with smicha, if he gets smicha from someone who himself got smicha all the way back to Moshe Rabbeinu from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so too the Torah's Kohanim is saying that a Kohen can only look at tzaraas and get involved with tzaraas if he is the recipient of such a tradition. Which means if the tradition is broken, just like the smicha tradition was broken, the original, so too that this tradition has been broken, in which case the Kohen is not qualified. And these are the three classic explanations as to why Taras Metzora is not something that your average Kohen is involved in really any time. And because he can't get involved in purifying the Metzorah, he certainly will not get involved in declaring the Metzorah Tomei. You could say you don't need much expertise for that. But you don't put him into a situation that you can't get him out of. And halachically, a Metzorah doesn't have Tumas Taras until the Kohen declares him Tomei. So basically the Kohen stays away from the whole thing, and we never hear of Metzorah in common halachic parlance. With one exception, the record should show that a mitzvah is mentioned once in Shulchan Aruch, and that is in Hilchos Tefillin. In Aruch Chaim, Simen Lamed Ches, Ifyut Gimel, the Shulchan Aruch says, a mitzvah, or more correctly, a menuda, someone who's in Cherem, and a mitzvah, asurim b'tefillin, it's also for them to wear tefillin. Okay, so mitzvahim now know that the one halacha that's relevant to them is that it's also to wear tefillin. Even there, I think it's fair to say that mitzvah was mentioned apropos of menuda, because cheirim can still happen, and the Gemara treats them together. That's where mitzvah was brought in. But that's the one mention, as far as I know, of mitzvah in Shulchan Aruch. The rest, Torah Lishma. Now, when we come to the Taras HaMetzora, if we take a look at the beginning of Parshas Metzora, Zosia Taras HaMetzora, the beginning of Perek Yud Dalet. So as we know, on day one of his Tara, so there's certain materials that are involved in his Tara, and they are outlined in Pasuk Dalet. When V'lakach la mitaher shtei tziporim chayos teheros. So the Kohen takes these two birds, the eight eres, cedar wood, ushni tolas, the ezo, and scarlet thread and hyssop. And that's it. And then as the pasuk describes, he shechts one of the birds, and then he dips the other bird in the blood of the first bird, and etc. And it bundles the whole thing with the cedar and the hyssop and the scarlet thread. And the question is, what is all of this telling us? Interestingly, a question was asked. It's a type of question, I think it's fair to say, you could learn these parshas many times and never ask this question, never notice this question. There is another area of Torah where these materials are used, and that's Parah Aduma, which we read just a few weeks ago in Parshas Parah. And that once again, the cow is shechted, and then the ashes are burned together with the eighth erez, then the ezov, and the shnitolas. Again, those three materials come back again. Okay, so these are the two areas of Torah where those three components are there. Interestingly, they're not in the same order in both places. How so? In our pasuk, it states after the two birds, eight eres, the cedar wood, shnitolas, the thread, the ezo, and the hyssop shrub. Well, in Parshas Chukas, if you take a look there in the Bamidbar Perek Yutes, it says that you take an eight eres, an ezo, and shnitolas, the hyssop, and the scarlet thread. So why is the order different? That's a question I think which probably wouldn't bother most people. But this question is raised by Rav Chaim Kanievsky, Shalita, in his Sefer Tama Dekra. And he's Rav Chaim, he has something to say on everything. And he says as follows. What would we say is the intuitive order? If we had to suggest, is there correct order? The Pashtus is that they should go in, at least in some type of, what else do we have to default to? In order of decreasing order of size, first the cedar tree, which is the tallest, then the shrub, which is the next, and then finally the scarlet thread, which is the lowest. I mean, that's just a practical list. Is there any reason to depart from that list? Well, let's come to the ingredients here. Rashi, in Pasuk Dalet, comments on the cedar wood and the scarlet thread and the hyssop. Says Rashi, eighth eres. Why does he bring cedar wood? How's that helping him? Says Rashi, lefisha negoim boim al gasos haruach. Because negoim tsara'as, they come as a result of haughtiness. He feels he's tall like a cedar tree. So it's put together with these two other materials. Shni tolas ve'ezo. Scarlet thread and the hyssop bush. What's the message there? Mata konoso. What's his cure? The yisrapa, that he should be healed. Yashpil atmo begavoso. Let him lower his bloated estimation of himself. Ketolas ukeezo. The scarlet thread, shnitolas, comes from a worm. So he could learn a thing or two from the worm and from the hyssop bush. So interestingly, in these three components, the cedar wood and then the thread and the hyssop, you have the problem and the antidote. The cedar is the problem, a little bit too tall is the thread and the hyssop. Except Mefarshim ask an interesting shaila, and that is, why do you need two antidotes? As if to say, the problem is cedar wood, so the answer is, I think, Take the hyssop and you're good to go. Or take the scarlet thread. I mean, they're both very similar to each other. So how come there are two cures for the one problem? That's an interesting shaila. But the answer, say Mefarshim, is the Rambam has a very well-known discussion about how a person should conduct himself in terms of his character traits, in terms of the various elements within him. The Rambam is a big proponent of, advocate of, the Derech HaMemutza, the Shvil Hazav, the middle path. A person shouldn't go not to one extreme, not to the other extreme. He should always go in the middle path. Now, interestingly, there is a seems to be a contradiction in the Rambam when it comes to the middah of humility. Because in this initial presentation, the Rambam groups humility together with all of the others. You don't want to be too extreme. It means you don't want to be extremely generous. You don't want to be extremely stingy. You don't want to be extremely gloomy. You don't want to be extremely effervescent. You want to be balanced and in the middle. And in the list of middos that you should be in the middle, the Rambam groups together humility. You don't want to be too humble. And you don't want to be too proud. It's kind of in the middle. That's in Perek Aleph of Hilchos Deos. But in Perek Beis, the Rambam takes aside humility and says, you know, with most middos, you should be in the middle, but not with humility. You want to really go to the extreme. Ma'od, ma'od, hevish, faruach. You don't want to be in the middle. The middle is not a good place for humility. You're not being humble if you're in the middle. Go to the side, towards humility. That's the question that is raised by Mefarshei Rambam. Is it part of the general categories where you should be in the middle, or is it an exception? The Rambam seems to have said both. Well, says Lecha Mishnah, in principle it's the same as the others, and that you don't want to be extreme. But the definition of balance and extreme for humility are very different than for other middos. For other middos, the balance is in the middle. For humility, it's very close to extreme humility, just not completely at the extremity, because you don't want to be too extreme. But it's very much in the direction of humility. It's not in the middle. And that's why the two comments of Rambam are harmonized. In principle, humility is like the others. But the parameters of what's called extreme and balanced for humility are very much in the court of humility anyway. Okay. So this brings us to a second comment of the Rambam. And that is, as much as Rambam recommends that a person should be balanced, but if he's imbalanced in a negative way, he won't be cured just by coming back to the middle. The middle is not good for you if you've done the wrong thing, if you've taken the wrong path. What you need to do initially is you actually need to pendulum swing in the other, right, to compensate, right, towards the other direction. And then once you've done that, lahavdil, they say it's like if a piece of paper is folded one way, if you just straighten it out, you haven't helped. You have to fold it the other way. And you don't want it to remain that way, but enough to find the balance in the end. Which means, says Rambam, if a person is very stingy, so the recommended course for him is not just to take the balance path. He won't. He'll always tend towards stinginess. He needs to engage for a time in extreme generosity, which he shouldn't remain that way, but that will allow him to equal out, to find his equilibrium. And therefore, certain Meforshim, if a person feels he's like a cedar tree, which means he's already erred way in the direction of haughtiness, so even as you want him to come back to the middle path, but his goal is not to engage in the middle path, he has to go in an extreme path even for humility and then come back towards the balanced path. And that is why, as the antidote for the cedar wood, has two components. The first is shnitolas. The first is the scorpion, because the worm is lower than the hyssop bush. In other words, if you're wondering, can it get any lower than a hyssop bush? The answer is yes, a worm. And that represents the interim extreme, even for humility, which will then allow him to equal out at what's the norm, the desired approach for humility, which is the shrub. In other words, the desired approach for humility is not a middle-sized tree. It's a shrub. But it's not a worm. The worm is just the interim recovery period until he's able to get back. And therefore, says Reb Chaim, that's why when it comes to Mitzora, we do not go in order of size, because there's an overriding concern here. It's a process. He should initially go from the cedar. First stop is the scarlet thread, the other extreme, and then finally to level out at the Azo. That's why the order is the way that it is here in Mitzora. When it comes to Parah Adumah, what will you say, says Reb Chaim? What are the messages from each of these things? The answer is, we don't know. because paraduma is a chok, which means you can't approach it as if to say, what does that say and what does that mean? So, and therefore you go back to your just very practical list of descending order of signs, which is exactly the way the Torah presents it. So that's, again, it's an eye-opener in terms of the attention to detail of the Talmidei Chachamim. We've all heard the psukim numerous times, and we're pretty sure they're saying exactly the same thing. And all of a sudden, you pay attention, and you see how the order is shifted, and various things ensue. So that's with regards to the Ezov and the Nitolas and the cedar tree. But what about the two birds? What do they come to tell us? Rashi again comments, and Rashi's words are from Chazal. Negoim barim aloshen hara. Negoim come first and foremost for loshen hara. Shu masi pitputei devarim. That's really a person who chatters. Lefichach huzkuku letaroso, and therefore he needs for his tara process tziporim. He needs to bring birds. Shemepatrit in tomit betzifts of kol. I mean, they chatter incessantly, and he needs to bring them and listen to them a little bit and realize that's what he sounds like. Now, what's interesting is, firstly, and the important inner question here is that birds chatter incessantly, but they don't speak Lashon Hara. I mean, not that we know. And yet somehow his habit of talking the whole time will lead him to Lashon Hara. And it really what it's saying is, if his voice needs to be heard that much, he'll say whatever it takes and we'll try and outsay everybody else. But an interesting question is asked, why do you need two birds? What do birds do? Chatter. Do two birds chatter? Yes. Does one bird chatter? Also. As much as two? Yes, actually. And there's no one to interrupt him. So the idea would come out seemingly with one bird. It's an interesting shaila. You don't take two pieces of cedar wood. We get the idea. So how come when it comes to the birds, there's two of them? And this question is raised by Rav Shlomo Gansfried, who is the author of the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, and also is the author of a volume on the Torah, which is called Apirion, after the Pasuk in Shir Hashirim. He's Rav Shlomo. And he gives us a very important message. You need two birds, because you need to examine the idea of talking, and even talking a lot, from two angles. You see, the message that one might get from the parshas of Tazria Metzora is that speech is bad. Speech is to be avoided at all costs. And that would be a terrible mistake. It is true that speech is potentially very damaging. That is true. But the moral of the story is not to refrain from speaking. It's to avoid the danger areas and use speech for positive. And it is positive. And indeed, there is a Gemara to this effect. The Gemara in Maseches Chulin on Daf Pei Tes quotes the pasuk in Tehillim: Ha'umnam elem tzedek tedaberu. Ha'umnam elem. Without going into the pshat, how does the Gemara darshan the words? Ha'umnam elem. Elem is a mute. And umnam, the Gemara darshans from the word umanut, an art or profession. And the Gemara says, you know what your desired profession in this world is? Ma umanusa shel adam ba'olam hazeh yasim atzmo ki'ile. The greatest career choice is to become a mute, because that way you'll avoid all sorts of problems. But then says the Gemara, oh, so maybe then you shouldn't learn Torah or Daven or anything like that. I mean, yochel afilu ledivrei Torah? What, even for Torah? Talmud Lomar, Tzedek tedaberu. No, speak righteousness. Speak justice. You should speak Torah. How could a person think that I shouldn't speak Torah? Because a person might get scared off speaking entirely. As if to say, if it's so dangerous, I don't want to take a chance. Maybe I shouldn't even learn Torah. Maybe I say the wrong thing about so-and-so's idea. So maybe I should just curtail all speech. Said the Gemara, it's a good idea, but it's not true. Tzedek tedaber. And therefore, we take two birds. But what's interesting is, as we see the psukim, these two birds, it's not the same thing that happens to them. They're not treated in the same way. One of them is shechted, and the other sent away. And what that means is, says Rav Shlomo Ganzfried, is that there's really two types of chatter. There's two types of speech. And one of them is dangerous and should be stopped at all costs. And the other is acceptable and good. And therefore one of the birds is slaughtered and the other is sent away. He's good to go. And perhaps we may add, this bird that's sent away, he isn't just sent away. It's actually dipped in the blood of the first bird, which is mixed together with Mayim Chaim, what's called, then he's sent away. As if to say, there's a certain orientation that you need before you're sent away and to speak at will. Namely, you need to be aware of the dangers of speech, and you need to be aware of the value of speech. The dangers of speech is the blood of the first bird, as if to say, that's very damaging chatter. Be aware. If you're dipped in that blood, it makes an impression. And in terms of what yes to engage in, Mayim Chaim, which of course is Torah. And really, therefore the full message to the Metzora is no one's telling you never to speak again. You got into trouble, you caused yourself a lot of grief over things that you said, but the answer to that is not to be quiet. It's to learn to use speech productively. And this indeed is a fear, in a sense, that many people have. When they embark on perhaps a program of Shmiras HaLoshon, they decide that maybe they shouldn't speak Loshon Hara. Task. And the reason why is, if you're used to speaking Loshon Hara, you're not aware that there's other types of speech. And therefore it's very scary, because it sounds like you're signing up for a lifetime of silence. And therefore, part of the rehabilitation of the Metzora is education as to other types of speech. And it's very interesting in this regard. The famous episode that is recounted in the Medrash of the peddler, Ahu Ruchla, the peddler in Vayikra Rabbah. He was traveling around, as we know, and he was asking, announcing, Man boy le mizvan sama dechaya, who wants to buy the potion of life? And of course, everyone swarms towards him, including Rav Yanai. And when he has everyone's attention, which of course he did, he took his Sefer Tehillim, and Sefer Tehillim asked this question. Mi ha'isha chavetz chaim, oyev yomim leres tov. Who wants life? David HaMelech is asking that question. And the answer is, Netzor l'shen chamir, guard your mouth from evil. Now there's a great deal of discussion about that medrash in terms of what exactly was his lesson. And how did people understand life before he came? Did he tell them chidushim? Did he give them new insight? There's much discussion about that. But what I saw very interestingly, a point raised by Rav Osher Weiss, is that while we're focusing on what it is that he said, we should also focus on who was saying it, not just on the message, also the medium. It's very interesting. The one that brought this message to Rav Yanai and through him to us, was a ruchla, a peddler. What do peddlers do? They talk the whole time. I mean, that's their job. In fact, so much so, that Lashon Hara in the Torah is called rechilus. Lo telech rochel ba'amecha. Don't be a peddler. Meaning, because what do you peddle? Don't be a gossip monger. Don't peddle gossip. So much so, because did you hear what Plony said, and did you hear what he said, and then what they said back, and it was, these people, they're carriers, right? They take from one, transport to the other, and make sure that it all gets spread around. So they're gossip mongers. They're peddlers. That's the name the Torah uses for a person who speaks Lashon Hara. And it was none other than a peddler himself who taught everyone the joys of not speaking Lashon Hara. Because really, if a peddler tells you not to speak Lashon Hara, but he makes his living by talking to people, apparently there is what to say outside of Lashon Hara. I mean, that's part of the the amazing message of this person. And indeed, it is recorded, the son of the Chofetz Chaim, of course, the Chofetz Chaim literally wrote the book about Lashon Hara, and it's very involved. If you've ever learned the Sefer Chofetz Chaim, many, many halachas, you can get admired there, and you may despair of ever saying anything again. And the son of the Chofetz Chaim makes a point of saying that people may have imagined that my father would like never said anything to anyone, because everything is awesome. And the opposite is true. He said my father was a fluid conversationalist. He was always talking with people. There's always what to say. He knew what not to say. And what's left? Everything else. And there's so much positive. And that is the the message of the two birds. Where the moral of the story is not, if the bird chatters, it's got to be silenced. There's a certain chatter that does need to be silenced. There's a whole field available for, which is then released for the second bird. And it's very interesting to consider in this regard. We spoke about the korbanos of the mitzvah. And one of the korbanos he brings is an ashah, is a guilt offering. We spoke about it in terms of his guilt for harming someone else. The Sforno, major comment on this Asham Mitzorah. And it's very important because it gives us the full message of these parshas, not just a partial message, not just a negative message, also a positive message. Says the Sforno, this Asham that the Mitzorah brings, it's a branch of another type of Asham. There's a concept called Asham Me'ila. If a person is guilty of what's called Me'ila, he brings the korban Asham. What is Me'ila? Me'ila is taking something holy and using it for mundane or profane purposes. If it belongs to the Beis HaMikdash and you use it for non-Kodesh things, that's Me'ila. The person has to bring an Asham. Says the Sforno, that's what the Metzorah has done. He has a quality. He has a faculty. The faculty of speech. It can be used for so many good things. If he's spoken Lashon Hara, not only is he guilty of doing the wrong thing, he's guilty of taking a good thing and using it for bad. It's like Me'ila. He took a holy thing. He took such a wonderful thing. How much Torah can be said with the mouth, how much davening can be said with the mouth, how much good feeling can be said, how much comfort, how much encouragement, how much positivity, all these things, that's what the mouth is for, and he used it for Lashon Hara. That's Me'ila. He's misappropriating something sacred. He's got to bring an Asham. So this, I think, is a very positive way to end, especially as we're always looking for what to take away from Tazria and Metzorah. And if the answer is, you know, Zaishtum, and that's the end of the story, that's not very encouraging. On the contrary, the full message from the two birds, together with the whole Eitz Eretz, Ishti Tolas, etc., is if you have your perspective straight, and if you have your value straight, and if you know what speech should be used for, as soon as you cut away all the negative speech, you've only freed yourself to use speech more and more for what it is, namely for all those positive things. And we'll leave it over there for this evening.